source for the best, most inspiring, and up-to-date information concerning all things related to MS fitness and health. This is Stephen Gloss, your host and MS warrior trainer and fitness advocate. The MS Fitness Challenge provides guidance and support to people with MS and fitness professionals worldwide in an effort to educate and train them in the benefits of exercise, nutrition, and mindset. Together, we can win the battle against multiple sclerosis. This is episode number 7. Today's special guest is the Director of Medical Services for the MS Fitness Challenge. He is a board-certified fellow of the American Academy of Family Physicians and has over 15 years of experience in conventional medicine, including clinic, emergency room, inpatient hospital, and administrative work. In addition, he has received extensive training in alternative medicine, as well as serving the medical director of the West Clinic in Pocatello, Idaho. This unique training has equipped him with the skills to provide effective treatments for many conditions that typically have poor outcomes with standard MD medical treatment. His extensive work with alternative providers makes him the ideal liaison between the regular, quote-unquote, medical system and alternative medicine providers. And through opening his own clinic, Vance Medical, he is able to combine the best of both worlds, bringing the best of what's available to his patients. The MS Fitness Challenge Podcast would like to introduce Dr. Mark Vance to the show. It's an honor to speak with you today, Dr. Vance.
Stephen, it's so great to talk to you. It's wonderful to hear you use your broadcaster voice. That's fantastic.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, you know, it's funny. When I was a kid, I'd always be watching like baseball and football, and I would sometimes mute the TV and just practice my own broadcasting. So this here gives me the chance to utilize those skills I've been using since a kid.
My kids love it when I try to do that. Like we drive down the road and they're in the car and we'll see these signs on the road. And I'll say, "That's McDonald's, you know, Pizza Hut."
That's wonderful. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah.
So people right off the bat are getting a chance to just get a glimpse of your personality, which is just, it's one of the things that I love about getting to talk with you, interact with you. You make medicine fun. I don't know if that's a corny way to say it.
I'll take it.
So getting into that, at what point, let's reel the timeline back a little bit. At what point in your life did you decide that you wanted to delve into the medical field? Were you determined to get into a specific field of medicine, or did you just kind of wanted to see where the boat sort of sailed?
Well, I hate to tell you this, but this is a little bit of a boring story. I had no idea what I wanted to do when I grew up. And so I went and served. I spent a couple of years as a missionary for my church. And I came back from there. I thought, wow, I really, really enjoy helping people. I mean, just, you know, just doing everything I have just to help other people, make them feel better. And I was trying to figure out how to monetize that. And the only, I just didn't have any imagination. So the only thing that came into my mind was, you know, well, doctors help people.
Right.
Maybe I can be a doctor. So that's what I did. I said, well, you know, I have no idea if I'll make it to medical school. At the time, I had really, really bad grades. And so there was no way I could go. So I was in Canada at the time. And I said, you know what, I'm going to go down to school in the States where all my grades will transfer as a pass as opposed to, you know, because I had like equal numbers of A's and F's, but the F's I'd repeated and gotten a D+, which was a pass. And so I came down to the States, went to school, and I studied my tail off, and I got like, you know, after the first year, my GPA, I thought it was a 3.98, but I saw the transcript here just like 6 months ago. My dad showed it to me. It was like 3.96. But either way, I did that and kind of worked my tail off and got to the point where my GPA was good enough that they'd even look at me for medical school. And my thought was, you know what, I'm going to just shoot for going to medical school, or I'm going to plan on being a doctor until, you know, unless something better comes along. And nothing better came along.
Was there a point where you finally felt like you were making a difference in helping people?
You know, what's really interesting is, yeah, I mean, the whole time I really enjoyed doing what I was doing and everything. But what was interesting is in retrospect, it never really felt like a calling per se. I mean, it felt like, yeah, this is my job. This is what I do, and I'm good at it. And I got along great with the patients. And, I like to think I was pretty good and everything. But it wasn't until I got introduced to the world of alternative medicine that I'm like, this is something better that came along.
Yeah. So,
and that became, and it was like, you know, I kind of found out about this and I just dove in deep. I, you know, went to the deep end and just kind of went all the way to the bottom. It was pretty remarkable. It was, and I just kind of soaked it up. And it was interesting in med school. It's pretty brutal. I mean, there's a lot of study that you have to do and it's really almost impossible to keep up. And there's all kinds of stressors. I got pretty burned out in my second year of med school. And, third and fourth year were a lot better because you got to interact with patients. And then, but I kind of got burned out pretty bad. And it was years before I could sit down and read medical texts for any length of time without just falling asleep or just getting, you know, I go to lectures and conferences and I did a great job. I kept up and I was able to help a lot of patients and stuff, but it wasn't my life. My life was my family and everything. And, when I found out about alternative medicine, kind of got into that, it was, it's like this burnout that I'd had was suddenly gone. And it's like I had a joy for learning again, a thirst for learning and a hunger for it. I just kind of studied everything I possibly could. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. What, you know, if you can narrow it down a little bit for us, what made you really start to believe in the power of alternative medicine? And did that newfound belief, did that have any impact on your medical career or maybe your reputation?
Okay. So as far as impact, it completely changed my life.
Wow.
Okay. So it completely changed my life. As far as what it was, it's an interesting story. I had a patient who had a really, really bad knee. And he really needed a knee replacement. Everybody said he needed a knee replacement and he absolutely deserved for it and he should have got it. But the trouble was he couldn't afford it. He didn't have any insurance to cover it. And, you know, if he went to the hospital that was down the road, it was going to cost him $35,000. If he looked all over, the cheapest he could find was $17,000. That's cash up front. He just didn't have the money.
Yeah, who does, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, some people do, but he certainly didn't. And I mean, you got a bad knee, you can't work. How are you going to earn the money to do this? So another friend of mine, he said, oh yeah, you know, I saw this crazy alternative doctor in Pocatello, Idaho, and he injected my knees with ozone. And he says, my knees feel 50% better after getting it done twice. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. I mean, that sounds nice. Placebo effect, whatever. but I told my patient, I said, listen, I have no idea if this works, but what do you got to lose?
Right.
And so he and I got in the car and we drove 11 hours each way. And we went to Pocatello, Idaho, where Dr. Jason West injected his knees with ozone. And I watched him do it. And I was all, hey, I could do that. I mean, I'd already injected his knees with steroids several times, more than I should have, but there wasn't really anything else to do. So I was already interested enough that I'd signed up for the class. I took the class about 2 weeks later on how to do this, and I was pretty stunned. This was down in Reno by Dr. Frank Schallenberger, and I thought it would be just kind of a pretty basic kind of thing, but no, the first third of the class was raw biochemistry. And I was like, holy smokes, this stuff's been researched really well. And then they taught us how to do this. And you know, the results I saw from people in the class and the stories that they were telling, I was like, wow, if this is even half as good as they say it is, it's better than anything I've ever seen. And so I, right there at the class, I said, you know what, I'm getting an ozone machine. So I bought an ozone machine there. They're going to deliver it to my house, or I think my house, not the clinic. They're going to deliver it to my house. You know, a few days later, and then I went back to my clinic and I said, hey, this is really great. I just learned how to do these ozone injections. We've got tons of chronic pain patients. I was working at a community health center, so we had tons of chronic pain patients. And I'm like, you know, we can do these injections and be able to get them off of all these terrible pain pills that they're on. And we can do this. And besides that, it's not even an insurance thing. It's all cash only. So we can actually have cash coming into the clinic instead of having to wait, you know, however many months to get paid for anything. And they're all, no, we're not going to let you do that. And I said, well, yeah, but they said, okay, well, give us the information. So I got them, you know, 30, 50 pages worth of information about how great it is and everything. And they said, no. So what I did was on my day off, I went to the local nursing home and I rented a room there and I injected some of my patients with this ozone and saw amazing results. And I was hooked. Now, as far as that particular patient goes, he got his knees injected. He got somewhat better. I think I injected him maybe once more. He wouldn't let, this is an amazing guy. Okay. I was charging, I think, I don't know, 150, a couple hundred bucks or something for doing the injections. And it was a cash only thing. But I told him, I said, listen, you know, I really appreciate you doing this. I want to do your injections for free, but he refused to let me do them for free.
Oh, wow.
And so he never got them enough to have him get as fixed as we would have liked him. He got some relief from that, but it wasn't as much as we wanted. Normally with that particular therapy, you try and do it every 1 or 2 weeks for about 5 times. And usually by about 5 times, people are tons, if not all better. Sometimes it takes up to 10 if it's pretty severe, but most of the time people get significant relief. But he only got it a couple, maybe 3 times, really spread out. So he never got the full relief that we wanted. And I still keep trying to talk him into coming and getting free injections.
So
anyways.
Were you shortly thereafter then inspired to open your own medical clinic? And when that finally happened, what was your confidence level going into that new endeavor? Because that's a big step.
Okay, so this is a huge step, and I have to be absolutely tremendously grateful for Dr. West. So what happened was I was in Washington at the time, in Quincy, Washington, and I was a family med doc and doing all the family med stuff and just on a day off shooting up people. But for family reasons, my wife's family lived in Idaho, and so we moved to Idaho. She actually moved there a year before I did, because I didn't have any jobs lined up. I didn't know what I was going to do, and I was sitting there thinking, man, when we go to Boise, I should probably just open up my own clinic doing these injections in Boise. And so what I did was I called Dr. West. He's in Pocatello, Idaho. So he's in Eastern Idaho and we're in Western Idaho.
Right.
And so I called him up and I said, hey, Dr. West, I don't know if you remember me or not. He says, of course I remember you. You're the only doctor that's ever come to my office with a patient.
Wow.
You know,
and I'd like to point out in that story, you can verify this, right? You drove 11 hours with a patient. Is that correct?
Each way.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. No, it was really cool. Well, I mean, I became good friends with the patient, obviously.
Yeah. That's just a testimony to just the love and care that you really have for your patients, that this isn't just a job for you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, so I called him up and I said, Dr. West, and he says, of course I remember you. And I said, okay, so here's the deal. We're moving to Idaho. I'm going to Boise area, and I'm wanting to start up a clinic kind of like yours. And I'm wondering if you had any tips and pointers on how to do that. And he said, yes. He said, come work for me.
Oh, that's cool.
And I said, you know, it took me about 15, 20 seconds. I'm like, okay. Now, it was interesting because, I mean, it's like a 3.5-4 hour drive between the two. And initially, he had me working 3 days a week. But it turned out in the reality of things, people in an alternative medicine clinic weren't too interested in seeing a regular medical doctor.
Right.
And so we bumped back to just 1 day a week. And I was worked in another alternative clinic here in Boise area. And I was working emergency room. And for about 3 years, I was doing this every week. I'd go over there and work. And actually, I worked in 3 different clinics counting there and in emergency room every single week. And then sometimes weekends and everything. And in the meantime, I was going to naturopathic school, learning about all that stuff. I was scouring and just devouring any kind of alternative medical stuff I could do, listening to podcasts, reading all kinds of books and journals and texts, and I mean, going to conferences and everything. And it was basically kind of like going through residency all over again. For a completely different kind of medicine.
Man, you got a double whammy right there.
It was amazing. And it was really busy. I mean, we had, and we, you know, we got the wife, we got the kids, we got, you know, everything going on. It was just a really, really busy time.
Yeah. But it sounds like it's something that at least that time around you had a little bit more passion for, right?
No, yes. And this is the difference. You know, it was like I suddenly loved what I was doing. I enjoyed it. I thought I really enjoyed medicine before, but it dawned on me. And I just had this conversation last night with a pharmacist. It dawned on me, you know, after a while, it dawned on me, you know, in medicine, with the notable exception of surgery and antibiotics, and there was, and the pharmacist talked about one other one, treatment for hepatitis C is another one too. But in medicine, we don't cure anything. you know, surgery cures appendicitis. Okay. You got appendicitis, you know, cut it out, problem solved. Okay. And so the way I think of a cure, for me, a cure is, you know, you have some symptoms, you give a treatment, the symptoms disappear, you remove the treatment, the symptoms don't come back. Okay. That's what a cure is for me. Now, right. I made that definition up, but that's what I call a cure. But, and so, you know, if you got strep throat, you take an antibiotic, you get better, you stop the antibiotic and it doesn't come back. That's a cure.
Right. Yeah. It makes sense. It's a great definition.
Without, and I don't know how that compares with the dictionary definition, but without having, but if you take away surgery and antibiotics, there may be a few, but there's very few cures in medicine. It's all about managing disease. Okay, so for diabetes, it's about trying to get your A1C to a certain realm. Doesn't matter how the patient feels, but if that A1C is less than 7, hey, you're doing great. Your diabetes is doing great. I mean, you might feel like you're about to die, but your diabetes is doing great. And you should feel proud of yourself. You know, and it's all about keeping blood pressures within parameters and keeping all these labs and stuff within certain parameters, so that you can have objective data. And this is what medicine is all about. And it's become much more of a tech. You know, doctors have become, I hate to say it, but we've been kind of the more science we do, the more we become technicians instead of artists. Medicine has traditionally been an art. And it's becoming more of a science than an art, which science is important. It's really, really helpful, and it can make a massive difference. And that's how we move things forward. But I think we forget. I listened to a lecture on this at a conference I went to just the weekend before this last weekend. And basically they said, you know, the guy says, listen, we kind of forgot the art of medicine. And that hit me pretty hard.
Yeah, that's a really, really unique and really cool way to look at it, that you're – not just, you know, you're using practicing medicine sort of like an artist. That's really fascinating.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, an artist put their soul into their pictures or their music or their whatever else they do. And it was interesting. They said that, and I can't remember what I should look it up in the lecture, but they said something like, you know, the doctors. Somebody came up with the idea that they said, you know, anybody who did really, really well in all their science classes in undergraduate should never be admitted to medical school. but they should, you know, they should get people who are artistic, and, you know, either drawing or painting or music or something, or, you know, acting or something. And it's interesting because I've always been pretty musically inclined.
Yeah,
and so. And the way they worded it was interesting because, like, if I get really stressed out or something, I'll just go and write a song about it. I had a patient die one time, and I wrote a song about it. And then I could put the whole thing in that box. And anytime I need it again, I can pull that song out and play it or sing it or something. And it was it was a really healthy way to deal with some very difficult emotional things.
Yeah, it's really cool. So, Dr. Vance, at what point did you begin to interact with MS patients? Can you sort of recall your sort of first exposure to that?
Yeah, it was when I saw patients with MS occasionally to rarely in my regular medical practice, but I mean, you got MS, there's nothing to do about it, or you send them off to the rheumatologist or something.
Right.
But as far as actually treating MS patients, it would have been when I was at the West Clinic in Pocatello, and he had these MS patients coming in, and they would do things like IV vitamin C, and you know they do multiple of these IV vitamin C's, and these patients would get better. You know, and it would be slow. It wouldn't be, you know, you do the one thing and you're, you know, running, doing laps or anything like that. But they would slowly get better and better and begin to just slowly get their lives back. And it was a lot of work, but people could actually improve.
That's something that's sort of rare with MS, right? Is people improving. You don't see that very often.
Well, you know, it's really important, and this is where I think another place where I think medicine's kind of, I hate to say it, but medicine's gone astray, and it's part of trying to be as scientific as you possibly can. In science, you know, you want to be able to separate, you know, what's the real effect from a medicine or treatment versus the placebo effect. So you have to do these double-blinded placebo-controlled studies and give half the people placebo and half the people the treatment and see, you know, what percentage of each one gets better. And so in doing so, it seems like – inadvertently, at least, it seems like they're trying to pull to cut back on the placebo effect as much as possible. I sit back and think, man, I want as much placebo effect as I can get, because all of the studies show that placebo effect is real. I mean, the people who got who got better on placebo got better. It's not like, you know, they actually got better, just as much better as the people on the treatment got better. But it's just maybe, you know, hopefully it was a smaller percentage of them.
Yeah, it's sort of a, you know, it's just that spirit within us sometimes is just amazing what the power of a positive attitude can do, right?
Well, it's interesting. I learned this from Dr. West, and I have to admit, he's absolutely been a mentor to me. He taught me tons of stuff, and I highly respect him to this day. And, you know, if you're in Pocatello, Idaho, you're feeling sick, the West Clinic's a good place to go. I'm going to put a big shout out to him. He's been an amazing mentor and friend to me. That being said, he taught me something, and I tell this to every single patient on the first visit. I tell them, you know, the question, and I don't know if I told you this or not. You might have seen it in one of my videos or something. The question is, what's the most important vitamin? Any guesses?
Oh, man, I think I actually have seen this in one of your videos, but I forget.
But you don't remember. Yeah. So what would you say the most important vitamin is?
Oh, man. I mean, scientifically, I mean, that's a tough one. I would probably vitamin C. That's the most popular one you're always hearing about.
There's two, the two most popular, you're right. Vitamin C is one of them. The other one's vitamin D, which can be a big one with MS actually. But,
right.
C and D are the two most popular, but the answer is for the most important vitamin, there's two correct answers. Correct answer number one. And then again, I learned this from Dr. West, but correct answer number one is the one you need, whichever one you're low in, that's the one that's the most important. Okay. For the vitamins.
Right.
The correct answer number two is vitamin H. Okay, vitamin H is extremely important. It's actually more important than all the other vitamins put together. H stands for hope.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really important because, you know, a lot of times by the time people come to see me, they've been sick for a long time. They've been to see all the experts, all the specialists. I call them all the ologists, you know, and they've had all the best treatment. And they've had really good treatments, really good procedures, really good surgeries, really good medicines. You know, all the king's horses, all king's men, but they weren't able to get put back together again. And they're feeling pretty lousy pretty much of the time. And if you're in that situation very long, it's not hard to find yourself in the middle of a really dark tunnel, right?
Right, yeah. Especially in the beginning when especially
with something like MS. I mean, that can be a pretty dark tunnel to be in the middle of. And when you're in the middle of a really dark tunnel, what you need more than anything else is to be able to see a light.
Yeah, vitamin H.
Vitamin H, this is exactly what it's all about. So So whether we touch you with a needle or not, and I tell patients this, whether we touch you with a needle or not, I want to give you the biggest IV infusion of vitamin H that I possibly can, because it's extremely important.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that we're relying solely on the placebo effect, but I want, in addition to all the effects we get, I want as much of that as I can. I want to get the best possible results that we possibly can. And that is an important part.
Yeah, there was a story of a group of Vietnam POWs that they were captured for a while, and only a small percentage of them actually ended up making it back, being rescued. Many of the others, unfortunately, they either starved to death, got sick, or you know, passed away in some other due to some other reasons. But they asked the survivors, what was the difference between you and the guys that didn't make it? And one of the guys responded saying that there were a lot of guys there that when we first got captured, they would mark a date in their mental calendar and say, oh, we'll be rescued by Christmas. And Christmas would come and go, and that hope would just be destroyed. So they'd reset that date and say, oh, well, it'll just be maybe another 30 days and we'll be rescued. And those 30 days would come and pass, and they would essentially run out of that vitamin H. And as soon as that deficiency got to a certain threshold, they gave up. So it's really important, especially with a disease like MS that can be, it is long-term. We're in it for the long haul until there is a cure.
Yeah.
That you've got to find a way to get a consistent dosage of that vitamin H week by week. You can't just be a one-time thing. It's got to be, you got to find new ways to find ways to integrate that and really stay consistent with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I want to ask you personally, why do you think that there is such a strong opposition to the notion that alternative medicines can be effective in treating diseases, especially like MS?
Well, I think for the most part, having been a regular doctor for a long time, you know, there's no um, there's no malice. It's just a case of not being aware. You know, people come as a regular doc, and even myself, it probably happens more to me than it did as a regular doc, more to me now. But people come in, they say, wow, I found about this brand new treatment about something or other, and I want you to read these, you know, 5,000 pages on the internet and tell me what you think about it. And it's like, well, how do I possibly do that? And so what you do is you go to your local medical society page or something like that and pull that out, see what that has to say about it. And it's usually saying, well, there's insufficient evidence, or there's, you know, people don't know, or they say, you know, it's been debunked by whoever debunker out there. And, or you just, you know, you're like, well, I don't know about that. And just be honest. So, I mean, you know what you know, you don't know what you don't know, and then and you may know some of what you don't know. And so in this case, it's in the category of you know what you don't know, because you know you don't know anything about that. So it's not a case of, you know, intentionally saying this for most doctors. So they for the most part, I think the docs just don't realize that, you know, alternative medicine's really progressed a long ways. I mean, we've always had herbs. And the way I always thought of herbs is like, okay, they may work kind of like medicines, but, you know, the medicines have been really well studied, and at least we know the side effects and everything. And I never had learned the herbs at the time. And so I just said, okay, the naturopaths can do the herbs and we'll do the medicines, and hopefully between the two of us, we'll get them better. But I don't think it's a case of willfully against it on the part of most practitioners or part of most doctors. That being said, there may be at certain levels people who are more against it. And the other part is this whole concept. There's a concept of evidence-based medicine, where the concept is, and they came up with this in the 90s. They said, you know what, we want to make it. Over the years, you know, in medicine, we've done all kinds of things that didn't turn out to be as good as we thought, you know, things like bloodletting and leeches and that kind of stuff. And so we want to make sure that we don't do anything that we don't have really good proof that it works. Sounds like a pretty good idea. But what happened is people said, okay, I'm not going to take just a little bit of proof. In order for me to do it, I'm going to take a lot of proof. And in order to have a lot of proof, what we're going to need is we're going to have these prospective double-blinded placebo-controlled multi-center trials. And they tend to cost millions of dollars to do.
Yeah.
So in order to get the best quality of evidence for anything, it takes a whole lot of money. And the only people who can afford that are the drug companies, who can make the money back later on. Or sometimes government can with certain things, but they can only afford to do so many, and they have to pick and choose which ones they do. So there's a whole slew of treatments out there that they don't have that level of evidence. But nonetheless, I sit back and think, man, if you got a study that had like, you know, 30, 50, maybe 100 people in the study, a much smaller study, and it may or may not have been a placebo control, but you take something like MS where people, you know, you know what the progression of the disease is.
Right.
And then you give them all this treatment. And if like, you know, 70% of them got significant improvement, which is way better than you get with a typical placebo, or way better than you get with whatever, then yes, it's not as hard and fast as doing these big studies. But if the numbers are so big in a smaller study, even to me, that's encouraging.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it'd be hard to dismiss, you know?
It's hard to dismiss, but people dismiss it all the time because they say, well, that wasn't a big enough study, or a case report. If you get somebody who's got some, you know, incurable disease, and then somebody does some treatment, and suddenly this incurable disease that was well documented that it was that incurable disease, suddenly they're all better. You're like, even if it was just one person, I sit back and think, I want to look and see what the heck happened to that person, why they got better.
Right.
As opposed to, well, you know, that's just an anecdote.
Right.
And so it's a slightly different way of looking at things. And am I right? I'm not saying that I'm right.
But you're willing to look at the evidence, right?
But I'm willing to take a look at it. I'm willing to say, you know what? Hey, this treatment seemed to work really well for those patients. It seems to be pretty benign. I can't think of any way it could possibly hurt you. Maybe it'll help. Maybe it won't. But let's see what happens.
Yeah, and that goes back to the concept of being, you know, of creativity and being an artist. You have to at least try things to see if they can work, right?
You have to step out on the ledge.
Right, exactly. Well, Dr. Vance, how then, you're the director of medical service for the MS Fitness Challenge. How did you first become aware of the charity, and as well as David Lyons, the man, the myth, the legend himself? What motivated you to want to join the team as the director of medical services?
Well, I tell you, I had no idea about any of this stuff. But I had a patient with MS come to see me. And he says, you know, there's this guy, David Lyons, and he lives here in the Boise area. There's this guy, David Lyons, and he's looking for some office space someplace to be able to, you know, see people, and maybe you guys should get in touch. And I'm like, oh, gee, you know, what, do I really want to do this? You know, we get people every now and then come and say they want to come work with us. And I'm like, I don't think I really want to go here. But, you know, out of respect for my patient, and I said, and I told him I would look it up. So I looked up, and I looked up David Lyons, and I read about this guy. I'm like, holy smokes.
It's incredible,
this
right?
This guy is amazing. And you know, assuming that what they say here is real, then, I mean, it looks like this guy's actually might be the real deal. And so I gave him a call, and you know, I talked with him and had him come on over, and I saw him and met him and his wife, Kendra, and we talked for a bit, and I'm like, wow, this is a cause that I could get behind. And you know, I hadn't done much with MS patients, but I know, I mean, everybody knows MS is a bad player, and it's a big deal. And part of what motivates me and gets me out of bed in the morning is to be able to, you know, make a huge difference in people's lives, make it so that people's, you know, pain and suffering is relieved. And our tagline for our clinic when we opened it up, our tagline is, you know, it's called Vance Medical. It's specializing in hard to treat pain and illness.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the easy ones, hey, I'll let anybody, if it's an easy one, then let anybody treat it. But, you know, we're trying to get the ones that are more difficult.
Right.
So, and MS definitely falls in that spectrum.
Absolutely.
So
that,
I was very fascinated.
Well, it's one thing to talk about all, you know, talk about vitamin H, talk about hope, and talk about, you know, the treatments that you're doing, but to actually be able to see it and to feel it, that's a whole different story. Last year, I had the chance to meet you at the MS Fitness Training Camp in Boise, Idaho, and wow, what a weekend to remember, right? That was fantastic.
Wasn't that amazing? It was like magic. It was like this.
That's the best word to use.
It was like, I have amazingly fond memories of that conference that weekend. It was I became very well acquainted and very close with several people there, and I'd like to think we made a difference.
Yeah, I mean, the participants at the camp, I mean, we got to see the power of some of your therapies in action. And I was lucky enough to be one of those people who not only saw it, but I got to feel it. And
well, you were the biggest skeptic of them all, I think. I think you were the guy.
I always have been. I've been the biggest skeptic of anybody who says anything that has to do with alternative medicines. Like, if there's any skeptic, I mean, I got my hand raised high right now. It's this guy. So
it was so funny because, you know, we did a treat, and you can talk about the details, but when I saw you the next day, you just had this totally nonplussed look on your face. It was so funny because it's like, I can't believe that what happened last night.
Yeah,
right? You tell the story.
Yeah. So typically with my MS, when I get really fatigued, or sometimes it's just random, it's out of the blue, I'll get to the point where my legs, it almost feels like there's cement in them. They get really heavy, and neurologically, it just becomes hard to control them. And typically, the right foot will be angled off. It's like foot drop, and I walk all uncoordinated and off balance, and I just look like a Frankenstein walking around. So
yeah.
During that weekend, you know, we've been sitting for a while, a couple of hours. It's a long day. It's getting towards the evening, and, you know, it never fails. That's how I started to walk. And I'm just so used to it at this point in time. But I remember you saw me and you called me over and said, well, I think I can do something about that. And I remember, I remember going into this, and I was almost determined in my mind to prove you wrong. Like, yeah. I wanted to just do this just to phase you, to just show, like, to prove to myself, not really, and no intent to like put you down or like publicly cast, right, like say that, you know, this is right, all hogwash, but just to right, to vindicate, legitimize my
the
feelings.
The MS was real, and that you had some significant thing, and it wasn't an easy fix. Yeah,
right. So we got on the table, and I remember you had a bunch of these needles, and they were just little needles full of sugar water, just literally water mixed with sugar. That's all it was.
Yeah.
And so you start injecting my leg all the way from, you know, pretty much the top from the thighs all the way down to close to the ankle. And I will admit they were pretty painful. I'm not sure if that just has to do with the sensitivities that I have due to MS, but it was pretty painful getting the injections done. And I couldn't really tell as it was happening if it was even making a difference. All I could feel was just these, you know, this liquid going to my legs.
Yeah.
I was like, this guy's just poking me a whole bunch of times. So, but what was just ridiculous to me is when I got off of that table, my legs, they hurt a little bit from all the injections, but I had full, I would say like 99 to 100% control of them. I could walk. I felt for the first time in a long time, I felt strong. I felt like I could walk like with that military step that I used to have when I was in the army. And it was, I could run. It was just, it was the most bizarre.
Yeah, you were running back and forth in the room there.
Yeah, it was the most, and I don't want to steer anybody wrong. Like, I have been training for an Ironman. I can run with MS, but when my legs get really bad like that, I can't run. You know, it's just, it's something I can't do. So to be able to go from where I was at that point to just after a few injections of like Mary Poppins sugar water, like it was, I mean, it was, you had to literally be there to see it and believe it. It was incredible.
It's funny because you sit back and think, you know, sugar pill, that's the placebo, right? And I talked to the guy who came up with that particular procedure. That's called perineural injection technique. It's by Dr. John Lifkoff from New Zealand. And I talked with him one time. He says, yes, you know, these injections, it absolutely is placebo, but my placebo is better than your placebo.
But see, I have to deny the placebo effect because I went in there fully convinced that it wouldn't work, but it still worked.
And it still works, yeah. Yeah, no, it's much more than placebo. It works. And he says, you know, it's about 75% of the time that it fixes things. I mean, the concept is nerves are they pretty much live on sugar. They're like kids on Halloween, you know. They just love sugar. And so if you can get them some sugar there, then you can get them the nutrients that they need, which is the sugar, then that can help them to heal.
Yeah,
they need to be able to heal.
Yeah, unfortunately, the treatment, I'd say, only lasted, I'd say, a max of 48 hours before I sort of went back to normal. But just to, like we talked about that vitamin H, just to know that there's the hope that there's a treatment out there that can help me feel better, that's a game changer.
So, yeah, I never pretended that would be a permanent treatment. And you knew from square one that this was only going to be temporary.
Right.
And usually with that therapy, you know, you do it several times. Now, I will confess, I've done it several times and on people with MS, and we get some long-term benefit, but we haven't had home runs yet. Short-term, yes. I mean, like, people 100% better right after. Not everybody, but certainly some of them. Where we do this, like, numbness goes away and strength comes back, and people are like, wow, I can feel where my hand is now, or I can feel where this, you know, whatever it is now.
And Dr. Vance, I'll admit, even just getting like a 24-hour respite from how I do usually feel with MS and being able to feel my legs again, like I should be able to, that it just, it's priceless, really, just to get that, even if it's for a day.
Good.
It really is. Back.
See, this is the first time I learned how long this lasted. You know, I figured it would wear off, but I wasn't sure how long it would last for. So you said you got 48 hours. That's pretty good.
Right.
That's not bad. Not bad at all. And it may be if you do it several times, you can get it to, you know, some long-term improvement. I don't know that you get 100%, but some long-term improvement.
So can you just sort of – I know you we don't have time today to do it, to like do a deep dive into everything, but can you just give us a generic overview of some of the alternative therapies that you do offer for people with MS, Advanced Medical?
Oh, sure. So when we did the MS Fitness Challenge boot camp, I did a lecture there, and I'll just kind of go through some of the ones that we've had in the lecture, because that's about a lot of the ones that we do. We talked about herbal and natural remedies, and we do a little bit of that, although that's not my main focus in the herbs. We talked about optimizing hormones, and we do a lot of optimizing hormones. One of the things with MS, well, not just MS, there's a difference between normal and optimal. Okay.
Right.
So if we're talking about testosterone, a testosterone level of zero is probably normal in an 81-year-old man, but it's probably not optimal. Okay.
Okay, that makes sense. It's a good example.
Does that make sense? So,
yeah.
So, optimal would probably be what somebody in their, 20s or 30s would be. And that might be up about 40 for a free testosterone. And so if we can get some of those hormones optimized, and I'm not necessarily saying that everybody needs a whole ton of hormones, but to me, the hormones, they help send signals throughout the body to be able to do certain things. And to me, it makes sense to try and get those hormones as optimal as possible for trying to get healing to happen. Testosterone, just for instance, is, it has some anabolic effects or basically building effects. And if you've got weak muscles with multiple sclerosis, testosterone is not going to fix that, but it's one piece that might help you get and sustain some improvement. And it might make it so that you're more likely to be able to have the motivation to even go and exercise and get your strength.
Right.
And maybe make it so that you're less likely to lose some of that muscle mass that you have. That's just one example. For the women, of course, estradiol and progesterone and DHEA and pregnenolone, some of these ones. And thyroid hormone is huge. If you think of thyroid hormone if you think of the thyroid as being the gland that makes the hormone that regulates your metabolism, that's how much fuel your body's burning, right?
Right.
And if you're not burning enough fuel, then if you can't burn enough fuel, how are you ever going to fix things? How are you ever going to prevent things from getting worse? You need to be able to have, and you can actually measure thyroid function with a thermometer pretty much. I mean, if you check your temperature a whole slew of times and it's always 96.8, well, that's a lot lower than 98.6. And people's temperatures are designed to be in a very narrow range because the enzymes that make all the chemical processes work in your body, they're proteins. And they're kind of like, these robots on a conveyor belt. And and if they get too cold, they get kind of stiff and they get a little stuck and they don't work so good. If they're too hot, they get too loosey-goosey. They can't hold on to things. And so you need to have a temperature that's as close as possible to your 98.6 or whatever, where you can get the optimal benefit from that. And if you can use, be it thyroid hormone or whatever, to try and get those temperatures at a normal level, then that can make a big difference. This is from the work of Dr. Dennis Wilson. And it can be a big deal. So there's that. Another one we use a lot of, and I was actually just at a lecture last night on this. It's on low dose naltrexone, which is a drug. Naltrexone is a drug.
Yeah. I actually started low dose naltrexone thanks in large part to you and your presentation you gave at that training camp.
Good. Have you noticed anything with it?
I've actually, since I've taken, I've only been on for about a month now, but since I've taken it, I haven't had drop foot in my right foot. I still have the numbness and tingling and weakness in my legs, but I haven't had the drop foot.
See, it was interesting because I at that conference, at the boot camp, I talked about naltrexone. I said, okay, everybody here who's been on naltrexone, raise your hand. And there was, what do you figure, like a quarter or a third of the people there maybe who'd been on it. And they said, how many people, did it make a difference for them? Or at least, I think, I can't remember if I asked how many people made a difference, but I asked how many people had side effects or problems with it, and every hand went down. Nobody had any problems with
right.
it.
Right, yep. Not an issue.
Not an issue. And, how many people had benefited? I think we asked that question, and it was like every hand that had been up, it stayed up because it seemed to help everybody. And, half the people, what was so sad to me is that most of the people there, like over 50%, not most as in just about everybody, but most over 50% of the people there had never even heard of it before.
Yeah, it's not typically something offered by your doctor. I had to ask my doctor specifically if he would write a prescription.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry you had to work so hard.
Yeah.
So it helps. And when you look at the studies, now they're not the big, millions of dollars studies, but the smaller studies, the benefit gained from naltrexone is huge.
Yeah.
It can do things like, when you start it can, and this is what I think happened to you. It can move the clock backwards up to about 6 months.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
Okay, so if you got some new thing that happened in the last 6 months, then it can possibly, not 100%, but it can possibly kind of make that kind of disappear. Now, if you did something that you've had longer than that, no, it's unlikely to do that. But it can move back. So my hunch is that your drop foot's probably been within the last 6 months or so, and that's why it got better. Does that sound about right or not?
Yeah, I had another relapse, which made things a lot worse. So I had a drop foot in the beginning. I went away, and then I had a relapse that got really bad again. And so now it's,
So that, but the other thing is, For naltrexone, what it tends to do is it can help a bunch of symptoms, but as long as you take it, it tends to prevent exacerbations. And it can either totally prevent the exacerbations, but if you do have exacerbations, they tend to be no worse than anything that you had before, which is pretty impressive for a disease that is universally progressive. Now, there's the, you know, there's the worst kind, was a primary progressive or something that tends to get worse a lot faster than everybody else. But MS is one of those diseases that keeps on giving. It says, you know, okay, we took your arm, now we're going to take your leg, and now we're going to take whatever else, and it right. tends to be get worse and worse and worse. And so if you can get on a medicine that can stop you getting any worse, especially if you can get on early in the disease before you've got all kinds of problems, that could be huge.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And then when they talk about the safety, I mean, there's basically no side effects. I mean, okay, you get funky dreams and you may not sleep as good for the first couple of nights, but after that, a lot of times people sleep better than they slept in years. So it's, to me, no, naltrexone is a no brainer for MS.
Absolutely no brainer. Yeah. So we don't, for the sake of time, there's, I'm sure there's other therapies that people, that you're doing advanced medical, right? But
right.
Yeah,
right.
But we're going to move on. I just want to get real quick into maybe some insights from you. You've worked with David Lyons a little bit. Can you talk about some of the alternative therapies that have an impact on him personally?
Yeah, and I actually got his permission to do this. So we did the sugar water injections on his arm. And, you know, it was interesting because we did this. And this numbness and weakness that he'd had in this, in his left arm. And he just like, he couldn't really tell, like he never carried a cell phone in his left hand because he couldn't sense it. And he was afraid he'd drop it all over the place.
Right. Yeah.
And so we did this injection on him the first time and he automatically just picked up the cell phone in his left hand and walked out the room. And he says, wait a second. I mean, cause he had normal sensation, 100% normal sensation, kind of like you did when we did it with you.
Right.
100% normal sensation, 100% normal strength. Everything was like 100%. Now we did it several times on him and we got so we had residual, long-term improvement, although we never got it to be 100% improvement. We did it multiple times, but each time we did it, the sensation was 100% back, which is pretty impressive. He's a bodybuilder, right? So as a bodybuilder, you tend to hurt yourself. And so he's got a torn pectoralis muscle. And again, I got his permission to talk about this. He's got a torn pectoralis muscle. We've been working on this one, lately, to try and get it. So now he's got complete range of motion of the shoulder. Like, actually the first time we did the treatment, he's like, wow, my right shoulder works better than the left one now. It was pretty
awesome.
We do some manual therapies that turn off pain and tender points instantly. And even just with that, it's like, wow. And so his shoulder's all loosened up. He's able to bench more with that. We've been working. He's got a ventral hernia basically in his belly. The muscles got pulled apart because he was doing too many weights. And they got pulled apart.
Sounds like David, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the guy. So we've been doing some treatments. And it's crazy. Because the way to treat is, you know, you do a major surgery, you put them in, you put some mesh on the inside, and you close it up, and that's how you do it. Or the old ways, you just kind of sew everything together. But we didn't do any of that. We did some injections. We did some manual therapy on there. And those muscles, they're just about together now. They're with, like, you know, a finger width apart, less than a finger width apart.
Wow.
Whereas before, they were, like, you know, centimeters apart. And so, you know, and that's been huge. And I didn't even expect it to be that good a result. So that was pretty remarkable. The things in his leg, things in his back, you know, various symptoms that he's had, we've been able to make a really big difference with.
So getting to hear all these stories, my story, David's story, just all the vitamin A just have been circulating through this conversation. It's, yeah. I mean, it's really exciting, but alternative therapies and especially doctors who practice it may not be so easy to find. So what would be your recommendation to those who are listening that might not have a medical professional nearby that, like I said, practices these types of therapies? What's the best way that they can get this type of help?
Boy, that's a really good question. Just first off, don't give up hope. Okay. Hope is extremely important. You got it. And we get testimonials from our patients all the time. And, you know, it's not uncommon. I ask at the very end of each one, I ask them, so do you have anything you recommend to people who might be watching this? And, a common one that people say is, you know, just don't give up. There are treatments out there. Just, you know, And so just look around, see what you can find. Try and find if there's any naturopaths in the area. Try and find if there's any alternative medicine docs in the area. Try and look up on websites, or if you find a treatment, look up on the website to find out who does that treatment.
Right.
And call around, do your homework. Do your homework, because there's things out there, and I don't know everything that's out there, but there's things out there that can make a huge difference. Huge.
So as a group, how can all of us here then at the MS Fitness Challenge, how can we help you and advocate on behalf of the power and legitimacy of these therapies? What do you think personally that what will it take for these types of therapies to finally be more widely practiced and accessible?
So it's already starting.
Awesome. That's good to hear.
So the reason why it's already starting isn't because of the medical society. And it's probably not that much because of the chiropractors or the naturopaths or the osteopaths. It's probably not that much because of that. But the reason why it's starting is because there's this huge and increasing demand for something different. Okay? For something else. Because you go to a doctor, they say, this is all I got. I got these medicines that are going to make you feel really sick or terrible. Or we've got the surgery that's going to, you know, do this or that. Or you try those and it either doesn't work or there's problems with it. And people are like, there's got to be something different. There's got to be something else. And they search for it and they look for it. And then they try some of these other things. They don't, nothing works 100% of the time. But they try these things and it might work for them. And then they go tell all their friends and then they try it. And so there's a big pent up need for this. It was interesting. I started doing alternative medicine and my lawyer talked with the medical board. They said, medical board says, we have no problem with the kind of medicine you're practicing, because they recognize that, I mean, everybody knows nobody gets 100%.
Right.
And so, and they recognize, and they get letters all the time from people say, hey, I want to get this alternative treatment. You know, why are you trying to stop me? And insurance companies are saying, yeah, I want you to cover this stuff. And, right now, a lot of this stuff probably, you know, a lot of the good stuff probably just isn't covered. We don't take insurance at our clinic. We don't. We don't want to have, you know, an insurance broker in the room with us when I talk with a patient. I want to have it just me and them.
Right. Yeah. And that's a big hurdle to jump. I can imagine.
Huge. And so many people, they're in the mindset, well, I paid for this insurance. Therefore, if they don't cover it, I don't want it. And if that's your mindset, fine. But I think, you know, if you're going for the standard of care, and in medicine, they have these standards of care. And if you're going to practice a standard of care, that's fine. But just be aware that you will get, at best, standard results.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's a sneak peek to next week's episode. But I'm going to be talking about it. Matthew Embry, the founder of MS Hope and the director of the film Living Proof, he told me something during our interview. And he said that dramatic results requires dramatic change. And that's something that really, I think, is applicable with these sort of therapies.
Well, who was it? I can't remember the author who said it, but, you know, I took the road less traveled, and that's the one that made the difference. And so it's going down the paths that not everybody goes down, where you can potentially find the things that will make the biggest difference. Now, you may find a bunch of things, you know, you may have to sift through a bunch of things, too. And you've got to do a lot more work and try and do a lot more research on your own. But there are pearls, there are little pieces of tidbits and stuff that can make a huge, huge difference for all kinds of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dr. Vance, that's going to pretty much wrap it up for today. If listeners want to learn more about you, your clinic, or maybe interested in maybe getting the chance to see you and meet you in person, where can they find you and reach out to you?
On the website, it's vancemedical.com, you know, VanceMedical.com. Phone number is, you know, 208-258-7558. But you can just email us. It's info@vancemedical.com. We'd be happy to talk to you.
Yeah. And I know you also put some great resources on the Facebook group from time to time as well.
Yes. I keep thinking, man, I got to do some more of those. I just did a couple about 2-3 weeks ago, but I've got a bunch more to do. I'm just so busy doing so many other things. Oh, but it's on my list.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Vance, I really, really want to say thank you for taking the time to be on today's show to really give our listeners just a small glimpse and just painting a picture of just who you are and just how passionate you are about really providing that vitamin H, that hope to people within our group. And I just can't thank you enough for that. With that, do you have any closing comments?
Well, yeah, I'll probably just close with the same thing I close on my videos. You know, just because you haven't found a cure doesn't mean there isn't one.
I love that.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. We'll take that as our closing statement then. That's going to wrap it up for this episode. Be sure to tune into next week's edition where I will get the honor and privilege of, like I said, interviewing Matthew Embry, the founder of MS Hope and the director of the revolutionary documentary film Living Proof that's now streaming on Amazon Prime Video and has been making waves around the world. If you have MS and you're searching for a source of hope, you're not going to want to miss it. Remember, new episodes of the MS Fitness Challenge podcast are available for download every Saturday on Apple, Google, Spotify, and Simplecast. A great way you can help and support the MS Fitness Challenge is by sharing, rating, and reviewing this podcast. The more people we can reach, the greater the impact we can have. As we close out, remember to check out MSFitnessChallenge.com, check out the upcoming training camp in Los Angeles, and dig into all the great resources we have for you. Also, be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and be sure to get plugged into the MS Fitness Challenge Gym Facebook group. The group is as active as ever and will give you the chance to get integrated to a motivated cast of dedicated MS warriors. To all those listening, to all our MS warriors, thank you. Don't give up the fight. Keep pressing, keep striving, and conquer MS.